So don't you worry. You'll be my resolution.
Is this music familiar? Well, it is to teens who are involved in the evangelical Christian church scene. But they're not there just for the music. Hi, I'm Rachel Kahn, and on The Spirit of Things this week, youth spirituality takes center stage right here on RN.
Spirituality can't be defined as a singular thing. Spirituality has many different aspects of it that include us in it. But I think spirituality is very important in youth and younger people, and I think that we do need to think of creative ways to draw them in.
That's Joshua, who's all of 16 and a youth leader in his church. We'll be hearing more from him and his pals later. You might know what I'm trying to hide. I recently attended a conference in Melbourne held by Tabor College and the Christian Research Association, which looked at the spirituality of today's youth, mostly teens, because they're the ones in school who can mess up their lives or achieve great things. Religious education teachers, chaplains, and researchers from across the denominations, as well as the kids themselves, are among my guests today. To set the scene, Philip Hughes, the senior research officer of the Christian Research Association in Melbourne and an invaluable documenter of religious activity in Australia, answered my questions about the state of youth spirituality today. Philip Hughes, in a recent study, Australians were seen to be the most happy people in the OECD. Now, on looking further at this study, what did you discover?
I discovered that the study was not really about happiness. What it was about some of the factors and characteristics of Australian life, which may make life easier for people, may make life more comfortable. It was about their housing, it was about income, it was about their health, education, about employment and so on. But not actually about how they feel about life, except for one question, and that was about life satisfaction. Interestingly, in terms of life satisfaction, Australians rated 12th out of the 36 countries in the OECD. So it's certainly not true that Australia is necessarily the happiest place, but it is true that we've got every reason to be happy, in a sense.
Well, typically that sort of study looks at the material things which we have acquired or have managed to enjoy in our lives, but the spiritual dimension is the one that's not very easily measurable. But that is your domain. With Australia having one of the highest levels of youth suicide in the West, that would be an indicator of something being very wrong spiritually.
I think it is. I think the levels of suicide. But we found in our surveys that a lot of young people are saying that they're hurting deep inside, and the hurt doesn't go away. That it's not just a temporary feeling of sadness, but there are some deep issues that many young people are struggling with. Overall, the studies have suggested round about 17% or one in six of young people really feel that life is not good for them. A lot of those people are turning to drugs and alcohol to try and mask the pain. They don't see a way of actually making life good, and they don't see life positively at all.
You've said that the greatest contemporary challenge for the churches is developing that spiritual sense of meaning and values to fill that void in the center of youth. Is religion necessarily the best way to do that?
Certainly in the past, religion has been one of the major ways in which people have sought to find a sense of self. But for a lot of Australians today, religion doesn't do it for them. And I think that since the 1960s, 1970s, most young people growing up in Australia have realised that they need to take responsibility for their own life, and in a sense, attachment to a religious community will only work if it's a personal choice. And for many people, it won't be. young people need to find their own way of developing their sense of spirituality, developing their own sense of meaning. But they need language, they need ways of thinking about it, they need help in doing that.
Well, I guess you're also implying there that religion has failed in some ways to meet that challenge or to provide opportunities for individuals to voluntarily be part of their tradition. So why do you think churches are somehow failing to be the first choice for youth?
I think a lot of churches are trying to provide a very specific answer. When young people are living in a pluralistic world where they know that there are many answers, that there are many ways of thinking about life, and to constrict that to a specific answer doesn't work for them.
Philip, it's been said that liberal churches, and particularly those going down the progressive line, are actually made up of an older generation, and that younger people are not as interested in those high-level biblical critical discussions. What have you discovered in your research?
I think a lot of the progressive Christian movement is very much orientated to the thinking through the rationalization of faith and trying to work out a faith in a rational way for our world. That's not where most young people are at. Most young people are looking for what works experientially. And hence, the progressive Christian movement is kind of missing the boat amongst most young people. I think most young people are so flooded with knowledge that the only way of making a good decision is to find experientially what works for them.
So the movement of soaking prayer, for example, that's become so popular in America and also in England, could be seen as fairly attractive then to young people.
Certainly, I think young people are looking for a great variety of things which might work for them, rather than for a rational system that will make sense in rational terms for them.
Philip Hughes commenting on the younger generation's preference for experience rather than theology. And part of that experience is community, a sense of belonging to each other.
One example that arises out of our research, we were invited to do interviews with a group of young people who'd been across to World Youth Day in Madrid. We interviewed them 11 months after their visit. We asked them, first of all, why they went, and most of them had grown up in a Catholic context, though not all of them, but almost all of them said that one of the things they wanted to know was whether they could own the faith that they'd grown up with personally. And I think we thought that was interesting in its own right. But what had occurred was, out of this common experience that they'd had, there had developed a real sense of community amongst them. And they were continuing to support each other 11 months after the event. But it was also interesting that they said that their newfound faith that had really become alive for them through that trip to the World Youth Day and through their common experiences was not something that they felt could be related to the faith that was being expressed in the churches back in Australia. And thus they were looking for other ways in which, through small group work, through Facebook connections, through having retreats and so on, looking for other ways of nurturing that sense of spiritual vitality that they'd found in that common experience.
Well, I can certainly see this flourishing in parts of the Catholic Church, the Uniting Church, perhaps the Anglican Church, but not all churches will be very willing to give up a most traditional understanding of their faith, and particularly the importance of liturgy. And I can think of the Eastern Orthodox churches and the Coptic churches being very much defined by it. So is this really an English-speaking Western Protestant development?
To some extent, it is something that arises from the Anglo communities of Northern Europe rather than Southern Europe, and certainly out of the more Protestant approach to life than the more Catholic approaches to life of Southern Europe. And thus, a lot of the migrant communities at the moment find the traditional patterns of church, in fact, working for them. And so there's still a lot of young people who are finding meaning through being part of traditional churches. And many of those do not come from Northern Europe, but come from other places. So, yes, I think that's true. There will continue to be that diversity into the future. However, certainly what we do find is that over time, as some of these second-generation communities emerge, they do not quite fit their traditional moulds of forming sort of communities around their traditions of faith. So we find, for example, that there are a great many people who identify themselves as Eastern Orthodox in the 2001 census, but 10 years later describe themselves as having no religion. So there is an exiting process there. There are large numbers of young people who were Catholic and who now describe themselves as having no religion. So certainly there is an exiting from some of those communities. And I do believe that there is possibility, even in those communities of faith which revolve around their liturgy, to have a variety of other activities that others may connect with.
Well, this no religion category, and as you've pointed out, includes people who have just freshly exited from their faith, might also indicate that there is another category that they are more comfortable in, and that is spirituality. Is the definition of spirituality becoming more clarified and more important in our world now, and particularly for young people?
Whether it's becoming more clarified, I'm not sure. It's certainly remaining as a significant term for some young people. Round about half of Australians, half of young Australians see themselves as being either spiritual or religious or both. And in fact, more of them now see themselves as being spiritual than see themselves as being religious. The first survey in which spirituality exceeded religion was 2009. So it's a development that has occurred. But it's occurring in a variety of ways. Some other research that we've done has indicated that there's two major forms of spirituality amongst Australians. One is an eclectic form, whereby people are using a variety of resources from a variety of traditions, from Buddhism, from Christianity, from New Age, from Hinduism, and so on. The other is a more nature-orientated spirituality. And there's a lot of young people who see the natural world as being the source of their sense of meaning and who they are and what life is all about.
Philip, how important is the role of the family in a young person's formation and what they eventually come to choose as their path, whether it's in the church or whether it's in nature?
Family is very important. Family is one of the first things that gives them a basis of relationships out of which the spirituality can grow. And young people see their families often as being the most important influence upon them. However, for that to develop and grow, peer communities need to develop as well. By the time young people get to the end of their teenage years, it's often the peer community that has most significance for them. So there's certainly a place for both family and for the peer communities, which often grow at school. School is a very important place for development of communities, and it's often not the content of what's taught, but the sort of communities that grow at school that actually has more influence on the lives of young people. But again, I believe that there needs to be a place for communities in the wider community, in the wider society, so to speak, and that the church may still have a role to play there, if it learns to play its cards correctly.
Well, Philip, it sounds like the church has quite a few things to learn if it's going to ensure the next generation of youth show up for worship.
I think it has.
Dr. Philip Hughes is the senior researcher at the Christian Research Association, which provides all the breakdowns of surveys and census information on religion in Australia in its quarterly publication, Pointers. Find details and links on the Spirit of Things website. Just go to the RN homepage or put us in your search engine. I'm Rachel Kahn, and this is the former Australian Idol contestant, Matt Corby, whose latest music breaks the stereotype of evangelical rock. He's hugely popular and currently touring with his new song, Resolution.
I'm giving up this whole eyes on me. Call it out like a family. Instead of bad my time, get a ride. Until the rubber leaves the road. You said don't lie, so I made the truth. Seem like a lie to even you. Control your fears, please.
These days, when parents aren't always active in their faith tradition and often are divorced, they rely on the schools to impart what religious tradition or experience they want their children to have. Elizabeth Webster is the head of religious education at Loretto Normanhurst in Sydney, and Kerry McCullough, the former head, is now chaplain at the school. I spoke to them after day one of the conference on growing youth spirituality.
So this afternoon we heard about youth and the challenge of growing their spirituality. Kerry, what do you think is the challenge you face at Normanhurst with all those lovely girls?
Well, I think much of what Philip said really resonated, and I was just thinking of the girls at Normanhurst and what they say and how they react. And one thing that struck me was when he talked about their need and their desire to have ownership of worship. And I think that's something we see very much happening at Loretto, where all our liturgies are student-led and created, and they own them. And in fact, that's something they keep saying, how good it is for them to just take time to reflect. And their emphasis is always on reflecting, time out from the busyness of life, to find a quiet moment and to reflect. And they love the fact that they create it, they choose the theme, the focus, the readings, and create the entire liturgy. And I think that has a great response amongst their peers as well.
One of the things that Philip Hughes said was that voluntary involvement was more effective than compulsory. So how is it at Normanhurst Loretto?
Well, in terms of liturgy and chaplaincy, the students can nominate to get quite heavily involved. So, for example, they're trained as Eucharistic ministers and they develop a real passion and understanding of the nuances of the liturgy, so that when they're giving out communion or the body of Christ, they've gotten a sense of the sacred, I think, around it, and they feel that connectedness to it because they have chosen the hymns, they have chosen the readings. But in terms of support of community service programs, students also have some compulsory programs, but just recently in the holidays, some Year 9 and 10 girls chose to go up and do some community work in Far North Queensland. and they have come back completely transformed, I think. So that's in addition to the compulsory service they've done. They've returned to this place and they've actually continued the work with Indigenous people, and I think what it does for them, they realise how much they get out of this work, you know. And whether it directly shapes their faith or not in that moment, I'm not sure, as we were talking about, but I do think if we can then create the context for them and show them that it's actually based on a tradition of service, of compassion, of justice that comes from a Christ-centred approach, and help them see the connections between what they're doing in Bowerville or wherever they go and what we're doing in terms of thinking around Christianity, then it can actually work for them. But we have to make those links for them. It may not happen naturally.
One of the themes in Philip's address was the importance of family. How do you, Carrie, as the chaplain of Loretto Normanhurst, encounter that? I mean, can you compensate for perhaps what's lacking in the family, or is the family really crucial to the young person's development?
Yes, I think family is absolutely essential, and their experience is there. And I think one thing is when you ask these students what really matters for them in life, family and friends are up there at the top. It's all about relationships. You will find some students who are branching out on their own in terms of their faith development, and they're quite different to their families. We do find a number of girls like that. On the whole, though, it's pretty much nurtured at home, but not always following the pattern or the ways of their parents. I think there is a difference there. And it comes back to that individualism that he was talking about. I think they're young people. What matters are relationships. That's where they see God happening for them. Service, as Liz just said, is really, really important. And a desire just to kind of grow into being themselves and who they are. So that whole kind of shift that we heard this afternoon about that move to individualism, I think it's so important. But at Normanhurst, we do very closely try to work with families and include them and bring them into that whole faith development. It's part of being part of that community, of creating a community of faith, which we're very conscious of, that communities of faith are moving to some extent from churches, a parish-based, into school communities. And so we try to provide for all that by looking after the needs of students, staff, and their families, parents as well.
Well, of course, you work in a Catholic school. How relevant are some of the observations at this conference that come from other denominational contexts?
I think what alarmed me was the fact that 17% of the young people surveyed said that they feel an emptiness inside, a deep emptiness, like a chasm that they don't actually know how to fill. And I think that would be something that would be a common experience. We've just been looking at the positive education movement as part of our pastoral program, and surveys would reveal similar things, that some students just have this deep sense of longing that they can't fulfill. And I think that would be a common experience. I also think the fact that religious education can be such either a really good vehicle for engaging students in their spiritual journey, or it can actually negate their spiritual journey. And I think I'm new at Loretto, but what I love about the program that Kerry's put together is that it's actually an opportunity for academic rigour and for questioning. And I think what we've learned from, you know, religious education is that it has to be contemporary, relevant. You can't go in with absolutes. You have to give them an opportunity to debate, you know, dialogue. And the teacher has to feel comfortable with their critique of religion and not see it as a personal, you know, attack. We have to be open to that exploration, because if they don't do it there, if they're not feeling safe enough to explore their faith in that context in a learned way, then they will probably walk away from us with a lot of unresolved questions and issues. So I think the quality of religious education either being a real plus or a real minus in terms of their faith development is pretty important. I think schools need to invest in that. At Loretto, there are 9 dedicated only RE teachers, and that's quite a unique situation that I found myself in. But the students know that those teachers' sole focus is religion through choice, and that they're passionate about the subject, and that makes an enormous difference, I think.
What are you seeing amongst your students and teachers regarding other faiths? Is that engagement with other faiths a difficult one? Is it nurturing? What sort of effect does it have on the students?
Very, very open to other faiths and to exploring and to seeing other faiths as, well, I often put this image to the girls that it's like climbing a mountain and there are many different paths to get to the top of the mountain and each one is valid. And I think that's the approach we take. Although we are Catholic and we're predominantly forming and shaping our students in that tradition, but we have a broad enrollment policy and we have a broad employment policy. So we have a huge mixture of people. And I think we work towards hospitality. We try to make people feel included and comfortable and wanting to explore that spiritual journey wherever they are in it. At the same time, we are firmly situated within the Catholic tradition. So we try to kind of walk that line of inclusivity but being authentic and true to who we are. I think it's really important to acknowledge the value of every faith as a pathway to the divine, to God, however you want to name that, and to respect and to see that. And I think our students do. I think the majority of students, and that is the tone of our community, is to respect that and to engage with them. And we bring that into our teaching as well. We teach courses and other things.
Yeah, I was going to say just on that we teach a course, Studies of Religion, and a study has come out about whether that course, because they're studying Islam and Judaism and so forth, does it improve their own tolerance, engagement? Now, the study found that the course doesn't, but if the course provides opportunities for students to go and interact with students from other faith traditions, or, for example, we've had a guest speaker on Jewish feminism, he's a rabbi's son, he's a lecturer, or we had Nourish come in, a historian who's an Orthodox Jewish woman. If they meet people from other traditions in the context of their study, it has an amazing impact on how they approach people from other faiths. So I think if we can combine that with our teaching and they can have opportunities for interfaith dialogue, I think that's a really magical kind of situation.
And I just think as well, in a world so characterised by fundamentalist approaches to religion, and we know the danger of those, you've got that kind of, well, if you call it secularisation on the one hand, or lack of interest, and on the other hand, that small but growing fundamentalist position. I think it's so important to engage with all these other traditions, to understand them, to understand who they are, how they are, and that we pretty much have so much in common, more than different. And that's what matters, and to be able to critique those other positions that might not be as helpful as others, to be able to look at them openly and critically, particularly in today's world.
Kerry and Elizabeth, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Kerry McCullough, the chaplain at Loretto Normanhurst in Sydney, where Elizabeth Webster is the head of religious education. Both got a lot out of the conference, but it sounds like their school is well served in the subject of religious education. This is The Spirit of Things. For details and to download the audio, find us on the RN homepage. Just scroll down the list of programs. During the conference on youth spirituality, one of the speakers outlined a new educational program on rites of passage. And she wisely asked one of the high school students in attendance to describe what sort of rites of passage high school kids devise for themselves, which often endanger their health, if not their lives. I made a mental note to speak to that young man who seemed unusually confident. Later, I found him, along with two other young friends, and they were happy to speak to me.
Well, I'm really delighted to meet all three of you. Tell me your names.
My name is Nadia.
My name is Joshua.
My name is Keenan.
Well, you're all from the same church. What is it?
St. Matthew's Community Church in Endeavour Hills.
How would you describe the church? What denomination is it?
A relaxed Anglican church.
A relaxed Anglican church. So that sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for creativity, Keenan?
Yeah, I guess.
Yes, it does. It's not as one of those high Anglican churches. It's not very formal. It's very low-key and relaxed that we go to and, yeah, pretty much just worship and praise the same as any other church would.
In the evangelical tradition of the...
In the evangelical tradition, of course.
The church is like a family, in a way. Just a big family.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, you're all youth leaders, so what does that involve, Joshua?
That involves being able to connect with a youth group that we run every Friday night at our church, being there to have some fun with the kids and also to teach them a bit about life and the Bible.
So the Bible is pretty central.
Well, it is quite. But first we try to get them to verbally talk to them about God and then introduce the Bible maybe a bit later. But yeah, that's the way we approach things.
And did you have strong Bible study in your formation?
Well, it depends. What formation were you talking about?
Was Bible study an important part of your life growing up?
Well, yes. I've been to another church, and reading the Bible has been quite important to my family even, and my other churches I've been to. But this one I get to explain it in a way I know, but not making it forceful across to the kids, to the youth.
And Joshua, how about you?
For a little bit. It's always been a part of my family's life as well, and what it's been centred around. It's all about, I guess, the principles and things you can learn in practicality to apply to your own life.
Why did you want to be a student leader?
It's a great experience to learn from, and you can take the things you learn from here and apply them to anywhere that you go in your life. And I really wanted to help out the kids that are younger than me and just, you know, help them grow up in maybe an easier sense than they would in otherwise.
Well, today you made an interesting comment in the conference about how young people kind of prove themselves without the advent of good rites of passage. They kind of invent their own.
That's true. It's almost a sad situation that this has come to in our society, but it's almost from a lack of recognition from the adults that are in their current area that they will create their own rites of passages to prove that they're growing up, to prove that they're actually someone in this world, someone to be recognised.
And what do some of those rites of passage include?
Some of them can include drinking, smoking, sexual activity. It could be vandalising things. It's almost a rebellion against rules and adults and anything that can say, no, I don't want to listen to you, I'm my own person.
Keenan, how about you? Have those sorts of rites of passage ever attracted you?
Well, my friends have gone through it, and I guess, you know, sometimes they'd ask me if I'd want to go through it as well. But I guess I see the right way of doing it, and I try to help them out as well, in a way. Yeah.
Why did you want to be a youth leader?
Just to help the youth in a way, and just to show them how I see it, and just like show them in like what's so good about God and stuff.
What's so good about God? Is it a bit nerdy to say you're a Christian? Is that still an issue for young people?
It's an issue, but I don't really see how it's a big issue. God is like a massive solution to our society, but not everyone sees it.
Nadia, do you deal with those typical reactions to Christians?
I wouldn't know exactly. I do go to a Christian school and I have a Christian family, so I'm very open about my Christianity and expressing it to the kids who don't go to Christian schools. Most of them don't. I haven't really dealt with the situation that I've been persecuted for my beliefs, but it's good because, I mean, I want to show the kids that they're safe for believing this and they don't have to be ashamed of their own beliefs as well, of Christianity.
Joshua, do you believe that young people today need to be drawn in to the Christian faith in more creative ways? Does the term spirituality mean much to you?
Well, to me personally, it means a lot, especially to my upbringing with my mum and dad, because my mum is very much open to the different aspects of spirituality. Spirituality can't be defined as a singular thing. Spirituality has many different aspects of it that include us in it. But I think spirituality is very important in youth and younger people, and I think that we do need to think of creative ways to draw them in.
Keenan, what do you think of the term spirituality? Does it have a lot of meaning for you?
Well, it's like a massive connection to God for me. Like, I guess, you know, the Bible is a good way of doing it, but I guess spirituality, like, it's more of like a personal connection to God in a way.
How do you relate to the kids who are part of this group? What are the things you do with them?
Well, because I was once their age as well, and it was really hard for me to fit into, you know, different cliques and, like, be comfortable with being a Christian. But, like, I guess I've found my way into it. And I just wanted to show them my perspective and what I've gone through.
What have you gone through?
Well, I guess people see me as a different person just because I'm Christian. Once I mention it, they think I'm a different person. But I guess when I met Christians at my school or friends that actually accept me for who I am, I realized who people are different and people are people and they're God's people.
But being Christian is also about the way you live, right?
Yes, it is. Christianity does revolve around everything you do in everyday life. It doesn't mean that you're completely different to everyone, how they live their lives. It just means because you're God's people, as Keenan said, it doesn't change the way you do things. It just changes the way you see things. It does change a few of the things that you do and how you express things to other people, but yeah, it is a big impact. People don't realise that we are just normal people, but yeah, they think we're strange, you know, very different. Yeah, very different. But we're not. We're the same, and we're all in the same boat, and we just want to help each other.
Well, these days, when you're young, it's all about, do you know this particular rock group, or have you seen that particular movie these days, DVDs, etc. How connected are you to popular culture?
Well, it's not really a major thing for me. It's not one of the top things on my mind. I don't really care about being in the in-group, or I care about my own uniqueness and helping other people show their own individualism and showing them that you're an original, not a copy. So, yeah, you don't want to make sort of a fake characteristics of them. Sorry, that's a hard word to say.
Sorry.
Yes, and so I don't know. It's not a big thing for me to be popular. Finding who I am inside, and I'm free to express that because I know that my friends will accept me for who I am and my family, and I think everyone should be respectful of that.
Josh, how comfortable do you feel being out there with a whole lot of people who aren't Christian?
I'm completely comfortable with it, and I'm also comfortable with saying that I'm Christian to them. But it also goes with a principle that I like to live by, is it you don't necessarily have to say you're a Christian. You can just show them how you live your life and how you act. Mm. Yeah, that's one thing I like to do when I go out into an environment where most people aren't Christians. If they ask, sure, I feel free to say that I'm a Christian, and I'm comfortable to be with them. They're people just like me. They just believe something different.
Are you going toward life in the ministry, do you think?
I'd like to, in a sense of worship. I'd like to go towards it and worship later and connecting with people through a musical sense.
So you play the guitar?
I play a number of instruments. I play saxophone, bass, guitar, piano, and I sing.
I detected a very good voice there. So you're very much part of the youth music ministry?
Yes, I am. I'm in a few of the musical aspects of it, and my dad's the head worship leader at my church as well. My entire family is musical, which has been a great help throughout my life.
And how about you, Keenan? What are your gifts?
I don't know yet. I guess I have to talk to God more about it, but I hope it's acting, because I really love acting.
Do you put on performances for the church?
We did once. Yeah, it was a great experience because we showed our church that the youth is a powerful people.
And Nadia, how about you? Where do you think you'll end up?
I'm still debating in my mind, but I love music as well, and I love worship, so similar to Josh, but I also have a love for science as well, and things for science and nature. I have a different approach to science because I'm a Christian. There's all these theories that atheists, that's right, have all these theories of things that are not God-related. I guess when I grow up more, I want to show science that, you know, God has to do with everything. He has to do with nature. He has to do with life and animals and humans, all the world and the universe. So that's my dream, I guess, to bring across, yeah.
Well, there are a lot of scientists who are Christians and who have communicated that, such as John Lennox. I don't know if you've heard him. He was in Australia last year. Well, finally, how old are you all?
I'm just recently 16, actually.
I'm 16 as well.
I'm also 16.
Oh, wow. The 16-year-olds. You've got a long way to go, and yet you're so articulate. You're all very impressive. Thank you so much for talking to me on The Spirit of Things. And let me just ask you one last thing. You're here at this conference, and all of these older people are sort of spreading the good oil from their particular perspective on spirituality. Has any of it in particular connected to you?
Honestly, only quite a small bit of it. I think I'm not saying this just to offend any of the older people in the conference, but I think we should hear more about the youth experience. We should get more youth ready and available up there to ready to talk about it.
I'm the same as Nadia. It has been an interesting experience to learn how the older generations see the way to teach youth and how they interpret it. But I think it would also be good to get the youth's input and also their opinions and understandings of each topic compared to the older generation's understandings.
Okay, well, just to defend my side a minute here, do you think that any of what they said was accurate in terms of doing as opposed to just talking and those sorts of things?
Oh, very much so. I mean, no intent to say that it was inaccurate. I believe a good deal of the material is very accurate and that it's going really well.
Well, Keenan, how would you like to participate in this conference? What do you think ideally would be the best way?
Well, again, with their opinions, the generations are completely different. Now we got heaps of technology, and now we're like really distracted that we can't really connect to God because of our technology. But I think to connect to youth, you'd have to like really relate to them. I guess you need like a massive connection. So I guess to help them out, you have to, I guess, not force them, but like show them that God is the solution, and like if they got any problems, that all they need to do is pray.
Pray. That's a word that doesn't come up very much in youth conversation, does it?
That rarely happens. It's people just see it as like talking to themselves, when it's like it's a powerful thing that's really indescribable.
When you pray, do you hear God speaking to you?
I feel Him helping, I guess. I guess that's where spirituality comes from.
I did a program on hearing God speak. And it's a really, really powerful and large and important phenomenon in a lot of contemporary Christian faith. Have you heard God speak?
Not directly, but I felt Him and heard Him through people.
Yes, I have before on numerous occasions. I would put this down to my mum is a very good teacher in learning how to connect spiritually, and I have to give her the credit for that.
And that was exactly the point of the program, because it pointed to the fact that this is something you learn how to do. It is a skill to be open. Mm. That makes sense to you?
Yes.
Sense to you?
It does make sense.
Definitely.
Well, Keenan, Joshua, and Nadia, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well.
Think about it. There must be a higher.
Joshua, Nadia, and Keenan are all members of St. Matthew's Community Church in Endeavour, Victoria. At 16, they seem to know where they're going, and wherever it is, it includes a strong Christian faith. This is The Spirit of Things on RN. Find us at abc.net.au/Radio National. Faith and spirituality is one side of the equation, but the other side is how your beliefs and values serve others. And that's something many religious schools are keen to inculcate, especially in a culture that's so self-focused and materialistic. Kids are often caught up in it and also brought low when they're bullied for not being beautiful, bright, or bold enough. So what's the antidote? In two words, social justice. It's a term that teaches kids to make the world a better place.
Earth is high love, I've been thinking.
Dr. Joan Daw completed a research project on youth and social justice for the Yarra Institute for Religion and Social Policy in Melbourne. Her findings are published in a book called Young People, Faith and Social Justice. And she spoke to me about the extent to which kids do get involved in making the world a better place and what it does for them personally.
You know, they're very altruistic. They really do care about people, and there is that window of time where they can be touched very easily and inspired and can really go out, and it can make a great difference to others' lives and also their own, yes.
What sort of social justice activities would 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds be involved in?
Well, at that age, it would be through the school. You know, at that level, fundraising is probably something that they're really into. There might be a particular cause that touches them, and they might do a sausage sizzle, or they might do a cake stall, or they might do a run around the oval, you know, raising money for whatever. Sometimes it might be a type of advocacy where they're putting up posters about some appeal or some situation, or maybe they've got something going where they want signatures. So they're very active in that way, but it tends to be within those sort of confines. Young ones of that age, and even a bit older, can't go out and do the other type of social justice that older teenagers can do.
And tell me about what some of those social justice projects would be for older students.
Right, well, sometimes it's helping at soup kitchens, preparing sandwiches, preparing ingredients, where they're mixing with other people, not just young people, people from all walks of life who are doing the same thing. Sometimes it might be going out, if they're of a certain age, onto the streets, if there's like a soup van or a coffee van or something like that, mixing with people who come along. There was one situation where they just go out there and talk to people. So it's not a case of where there may be homeless people who have various specific physical needs. They can't do that. They can't sort of fix their whole lives. But sometimes people just want to be recognised as people, and they just want some conversation. So sometimes it might be just a coffee and a chat. And young people can do that really well. And sometimes it's greatly enriching for them, for their own personalities, their own confidence, that they can go and talk to anyone off the street and feel that they're helping that person, helping make a difference.
How much is that connected to the charism of the school, the order in which the particular Catholic school is under?
Well, this was one of the interesting things that came out of the research. Sometimes the charism of the school did have a particular social justice leaning. And so when that was the case, well, then it really happened quite easily. Sometimes it might be through the founder of the school. Perhaps the founder of the school wanted to make education available to underprivileged children or whatever. And so there was this, right from the beginning, this sense towards working for justice for the underprivileged. So sometimes it comes through that way. Sometimes schools have already developed little organisations within the schools that deal with social justice. But one of the things that did show up was where the social justice imperative was actually integrated into the charism of like the founding order of the school or the school itself, that did seem to give the context, and it did seem to give the ongoing nature of community there that supported the social justice activities.
Well, that raises the question of how well students who were involved in these activities connected it to the core beliefs of the faith.
Whilst some of them were able to articulate their social justice as the expression of their faith, a lot weren't. A lot were disinclined to see it as something they did because of their faith. There could be various reasons for that. Some people think that young people generally have difficulty articulating their faith, and so that could be part of it. Another suggestion was that young people, for some, well, perhaps for a lot of young people who are not really fully grounded in their faith in the sense of having the experience of their faith as well as the theory of their faith, that maybe there's a bit of a disconnect there and maybe they don't have the confidence to express the social justice in terms of faith. So yes, it wasn't quite as clear-cut in terms of their articulation.
Was that something that teachers have recognised and are trying to work on as something they must address?
Yes, I think all the teachers and coordinators were very aware of that. You know, some people said, well, look, if the young people aren't, for example, going to Mass, because we're talking about Catholic schools here, well, then they're not really going to ask the questions about what's the connection between Mass and what I'm doing in social justice. So sometimes it's because they don't have that holistic grounding in their whole faith tradition that there seems to be that bit of a disconnect there. But I do think the teachers are very aware of that.
Joan, in your research, what did you discover as really the motivation for this kind of work? I mean, if young people are not going to Mass and are not necessarily compelled to do this because of their beliefs, then what do you think is motivating them to want to be involved in social justice activities?
Yes. Well, apart from the natural altruism that I mentioned before, sometimes they're inspired by the stories that they hear. When schools, for example, get speakers in who talk about their work maybe in developing countries, maybe in situations of great poverty and injustice, and where there's something fairly clear that a young person could do to make a difference, well, then they tend to be inspired by that. But it tends to be first-hand accounts, so they have to be authentic. So if, for example, the teachers themselves have had the opportunity of going and doing an immersion experience in, say, a place like Indonesia or wherever, and then they can come back and they can tell the students themselves what they've done, then that really seems to tap into the students' imagination. It has to be authentic. That's really important. And when it's actually built into their own experience, for example, if it's tapped into the school story or the school environment, the school community in some way, then it makes it real for them and it's not just abstract. And another thing that motivates them is that if they can make the difference, there's no point in them having a task, a goal that's just unachievable. It has to be achievable because they have to know they'll put in the effort and they'll get there. They need to see the results. Young people are like that. They want to see the results. They're not going to stick around for months and months and months if nothing happens. Some of these students would go to Aboriginal missions and help out there, maybe help paint the classrooms during the school holidays or help with vegetable patches, meals on wheels, that type of thing. So I was really very impressed at the range of activities that the students themselves thought up, yes.
You can read the full account of Joan Dawe's findings in her book, Young People, Faith and Social Justice, which, as she mentioned, was carried out among students in Catholic schools and organizations. If you have any thoughts on young people and spirituality, just post a comment on our website. Find us on the RN homepage in the list of programs, where you can also download the audio. I'd like to thank Tabor College in Melbourne and the Christian Research Association for the conference, which covered a lot of ground. But as you heard from the kids themselves, there just weren't enough of them present. And come along next week for another adventure into the spirit of things, right here on RN with me, Rachel Kahn.
Once, Australia feared the yellow peril. Now, how do we feel about the Asian century?
A nation which is able to handle diversity, a nation which is used to dealing cross-culturally, is a nation that does far better to utilise the opportunities of the Asian century.
Asia and Australia, that's the subject of the final episode of Mongrel Nation, with me, Tim Soppomasane. You can download this Mongrel Nation from the RN website.